In the coming months, Lake Effect will be exploring the impact of climate change through a series of conversations with Paul Rober, a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at UW-Milwaukee. The series will include listener questions about how climate change is directly impacting our region and our lives. To get things started, Rober sat down with WUWM environmental reporter Susan Bentz and they begin their conversation by explaining some basic facts about climate change.
So let's do the basics. Talk about climate change. What is it? What causes it? What's known and yet unknown?
So the climate is a very complex, dynamical system, and it changes over many different periods of time, very short periods to very long periods. We know some of those short periods, for example, the climate overnight is different from the climate during the day. So that's a 24-hour cycle. That's just part of our natural system. There's also seasonal cycles. We know it changes over the year. There are also decadal cycles over a 10-year time scale, which some don't have anything to do with what people are talking about with respect to climate change. In other words, it's not human forced in any way. It's part of the natural cycles in the system. There are deep ocean circulations that affect the climate, which some are not related to anything that we're doing. They're just part of the circulation system. We know that the atmosphere responds very strongly to the ocean because the ocean temperatures change very slowly. And so you can imagine it as being this push to the atmosphere always in a certain direction when it's set up in that particular way. Climate also is very different depending on where you are on the globe. And even when we're talking about something like global warming, where the average temperatures across the globe are clearly warming, doesn't mean it's warming everywhere at the same pace or even warming everywhere. Some places are actually cooling, even as the whole planet is warming. So it's a very complicated picture. There are also very, very long time scales in climate, which have nothing to do with human influence. Those are forced by orbital cycles. Effectively, it's the tilt of the Earth that affects our seasonality. And so having stronger tilt will make us more seasonal, and having less tilt will make us less seasonal. And we have this wobble in our tilt over tens of thousands of years. So the ice ages were driven primarily by that tilt. So we also know that the climate is very sensitive to small changes in these parameters. And one of the things that we also know is that we've been changing the gaseous constituents of the atmosphere very much over the period in which we've industrialized our economies. We've understood this, actually, the big picture of climate change, we've understood for hundreds of years. What we've been working on for the last while has been the details. Obviously, the details are very important, but the general concept of why this is changing and how it's changing has been understood for hundreds of years.
So when you say details, how do you fit into those details?
Well, so for example, most people are not really that interested in the fact that the average temperature over the globe might be changing by a degree or 2 degrees or 3 degrees. They want to know, how does that affect me where I live? So that detail is a much harder question to answer than the big picture detail of the average temperature over the globe, because as I mentioned before, there are all these different cycles that are running and changing in different directions. And so being able to pinpoint exactly what's happening in a particular location is a much harder problem to solve.
Then how is your research tackling that, those big questions?
So most of my research traditionally has been really on weather systems. Storm systems, winter storms has been a big part of my research. Thunderstorms, severe weather has been a big part of my research. Heavy rainfall and flooding has been a big part of my research. I became involved with the School of Freshwater Sciences some years ago, and that sort of initiated my interest in Great Lakes water levels and the cycles that are embedded in that, which also, as it turns out, relates very strongly to climate change. So my focus has been just all things weather, and because there's a famous saying, climate is what you expect and weather is what you get. And that's a nice way of encapsulating the understanding of it, is because what we experience on a day-to-day basis is weather. Our climate is some statistical amalgamation of all those daily weather events.
So let's focus a bit on the Great Lakes. We do hear from listeners. We have heard from one saying that she, I believe, is a homeowner, a property owner on the Great Lakes, and she's alarmed at the impacts of climate change. Please expand science-based reporting on climate. So can we dig into the Great Lakes a bit and what's happening?
Sure. So first of all, Great Lakes water levels are basically like your bank budget. So you have income and you have expenses. And the main income to the Great Lakes are precipitation, that is rainfall or snow, right over the lake or in the drainage basin that flows into the lake. And the expense is evaporation from the lake. There's also inflow from upstream lakes and outflow from downstream lakes, which fluctuates a bit based on the particular water level at the time. So really what we have to get a handle on is the income and the expenses, which primarily, again, are the precipitation and the evaporation. And it turns out that both of these are very sensitive to climate change. And a few years ago, we said, well, you know, if the temperature is warming, then evaporation is going to increase, and that's going to reduce the Great Lakes water levels. But now we understand it's a little bit more complicated than that. And in fact, precipitation also increases. And because precipitation is the primary driver of the lake levels, depending on what's happening regionally with temperatures can determine whether lake levels will go up or go down in a particular time period. And so right now we're seeing, after having a record low level in the lake levels just a few years ago, back in 2013, now we're approaching record high levels. These cycles have always been part of the natural cycle of the Great Lakes, but we're seeing an amplification of this, likely related to climate change. And an example of that is the evaporation component. If you have a warmer winter, then you have less ice cover. And because you have less ice cover, that means when things start warming up in the spring, all of that energy can be expended just on heating the surface waters of the lake, which means the subsequent summer temperatures in the lake are much warmer. In fact, we're seeing summers where lake temperatures in Lake Michigan, southern basin, in the middle of that southern basin, are hitting 80 degrees Fahrenheit. So, you know, bathtub water in the Great Lakes, which is pretty amazing considering that just a few years ago, upper 60s was about the limit that you'd see. Well, if it's that warm, as you get into the late summer and early fall, you're getting more colder air starting to come in, and because the water temperature changes much more slowly, you have massive amounts of evaporation that are occurring during those time periods, and you lose a lot of water as a result of that, and that drives the lake levels down. But it depends on how much precipitation you're getting at the same time. And it also depends on that particular winter season, because we've also had some cold winter seasons recently. Even as the planet itself was much warmer, historically new records for global temperature, regionally we were cold because of those other smaller scale cycles that I was talking about. You can get changes that are opposite to the direction of what the overall climate change is for a particular year. And the Great Lakes doesn't care what the global temperature is. It cares what is the temperature over the lake. And that's what it responds to. So if you happen to have a cold winter and a lot of ice, then you're not going to have much evaporation. But if you're also having more precipitation, the lake levels are going to go up. And so what this means for the Great Lakes water levels is probably we're going to see not necessarily average decreases in the lake levels or average increases. They might be pretty close to historical averages, but the highs will be very high and the lows will be very low. So we'll have much more extremes than we used to. And if you think about it, that's a much harder problem to deal with. If it was just the lake levels dropped by a certain amount, then you could accommodate that. You could move marinas, you could dredge channels, you could do all those things. But if it's jumping up and down over 5 years, that's really hard to deal with.
What are your students thinking about this?
I teach students who are both focused on atmospheric sciences, but also more general classes. And for example, I teach a lot in UWM's Honors College, and there's a tremendous interest in climate change. And so I've taught a couple classes on climate change. And students are basically just want to wrap their heads around the problem, understand it better. And I think that's generally true. There's been a lot of conflicting and misinformation that's been put out there. And so one of my hopes in talking to you about these things is just to put out there what the science actually is, what we understand about it, and then people can draw their own conclusions.
So what's a key bit of misinformation?
Well, there have been historically people who have, first of all, tried to muddy the waters in terms of whether or not this is even happening. It's really hard now for anyone to make that case. And so the adjustment has been towards, okay, it's happening, but it's a natural cycle because climate has always changed. And the second part of that statement is true. Yes, climate has always changed. But what is different now is we know that we are forcing it in a particular direction in a very fast pace compared to historical norms. And it's not related to orbital cycles or radiation from the sun or anything like that. It's not any of those things. We know very clearly what's going on. And as I said before, what we're really focusing on now is just understanding the details better.
So you do as much public speaking as your schedule allows. Why give so much time to that? Why do you feel called to do that?
That's a nice way to phrase it, feeling called to do that. I really do, because I even though the focus of my research isn't climate change per se, it's affected very strongly by it. And so I, obviously being in the field, I hear a lot about it, I read a lot about it, and I understand the difference between what we as a scientific community understand about climate change and what the public perception seems to be. And mostly it's about the confusion. I think a lot of people in the United States now understand that this is a thing, that it's something we have to deal with, but they have a lot of questions. And I feel, to the extent that I can answer those questions or at least give our best understanding of what those answers are, then I should be doing that.
Where does policy fit in here?
So my focus obviously is not policy, it's science. And my focus in these talks we'll have is to just let people understand what we do know and what the consequences are likely to be. Policy obviously is the next step. That's what you have to do. Science should inform policy. And so based on our scientific understanding, then people have to decide what they're going to do about it. Here, what we're doing is giving people information. It's up to them to decide what to do about it. But I do, obviously, policy is the only way we're going to have to address any of this. And it's a combination of what's called adaptation and mitigation. Mitigation is where you address the problem directly and try to reduce its impacts. Adaptation is understanding that a certain amount of consequences are already baked into the system, literally baked in, and we're going to have to adapt to some of those changes. And it's very clear at this point that there's a lot of adaptation that's going to have to happen.
Is there more science? Is there more research around measures that can be taken?
Well, one of the most critical aspects, I think, from climate change perspective is sea level rise. And the reason I say that is because up until a few years ago, the panel on climate change, the international panel, IPCC, was only projecting sea level rise based on thermal expansion of the sea, which means basically as the water's warm, they're going to take up more volume. So it wasn't taking into account any of the melting that's occurring. And over the last 10 years or so, we've got a much better understanding of how much melting is going on and how fast that melting is occurring. And every subsequent evaluation of that shows that it's happening quicker than the last estimate. So we know this is a really significant problem. Ironically, it doesn't affect Wisconsin directly. It really doesn't affect the Great Lakes water levels. But indirectly, it probably will have an effect over a longer time scale, say a century time scale, as sea levels rise along the coast, and the sea level rise is dramatic along the coast. People will be moving inwards, inland, to adapt to that. Well, that's going to have really significant impacts all around the world in terms of migration of populations.
Have there been any moments when you've spoken publicly where a reaction or a question or any combination of what might have happened in that room struck you?
The thing that I've seen that's changed over the years is there's more understanding that climate change is happening now than there was just a few years ago. And so the questions now are more just about, okay, I understand it's happening. Tell me more about it. Tell me what the magnitude of these changes are. Tell me how it's going to affect me where I live, those kinds of things. Or you're in a particular business that's very sensitive to those changes, people will want to know, okay, how is that affecting that particular business?
So you've said that insurance companies are knocking on your door.
As an example, obviously insurance companies are to some degree on the front line of this because they're paying out claims. And interestingly, they have a very big, much bigger problem on their hands because it's just not just climate change, but it's a combination of climate change and the built infrastructure that we have. So where do people live? Where do they work? 40% of the U.S. economy is on counties that have at least one shore on the coast. So if you're talking about sea level rise, you're going to talk about 40% of the U.S. economy being affected by that. That's really significant. And obviously, if you have tropical storms that may be changing in terms of intensity or frequency in areas that might be affected, and at the same time, you're building up in those very same areas and sea level is rising in those very same areas, then you have a perfect storm of events that are occurring that, that affect that particular industry.
So we spoke earlier about the call to speak to help better inform people in the community, in the area. Do you personally feel a sense of stewardship?
I would hope that everyone feels a sense of stewardship towards the planet and will try to do what they can to preserve it for future generations, and not just people, but the entire planet, the biosphere, if you will. How do we do that? What is the best way to do that? Using a science, we can understand a little bit more about what the consequences are of doing nothing, for example, or of doing something. And as you bring in other expertise from other fields, you can understand how that fits into the whole socio-political structure of things and ways that we might be able to accommodate this. As an example, I think one clear thing that we could be doing, although I'm segueing a little bit into the policy side of things now, it's pretty clear that we need to invest in infrastructure in this country anyway. It seems clear that if we invest in next generation infrastructure that makes it easier for people just to not be so carbon intensive, that would be a great way to both improve things in our day-to-day lives and also be looking towards the future. So being smart about the kinds of changes that we do, doing things we need to do anyway and just doing them better would be a great way to go forward.
What would you say to people who are listening to cultivate their questions, to, you know, reach out and continue our conversation around climate change?
I would just ask, what is it that you're unclear on with respect to climate change? What do you need more information about? And we will do our best to try to answer those questions.
Paul Rober is a distinguished professor of atmospheric science at UW-Milwaukee. He spoke with WUWM's environmental reporter, Susan Bentz, and if you're curious about climate change and how it impacts your life, you can submit your questions on our website, wuwm.com.